Welcome to Disrupt Disruption, a series of intimate interviews with global thought leaders and practitioners operating at the intersection of business, leadership, and technology. We're discussing all things innovation and disruption and how to not only survive but thrive in these times of exponentially accelerating change. Trusted by CEOs, founders, and leaders globally for the latest take on business models, methods, culture, and leadership, we cut to the chase, debunk the hype, and get real. You're in great company. I'm your host, Pascal Finette, co-founder of Be Radical. Hey friends, it's Pascal here. I am super excited to be here with a dear friend. And Alvaro has a really fascinating background. He is, on one hand, and this pertains to our conversation today, the co-founder, CEO, and chief innovation officer at Brain. And Brain is the innovation arm of Grupo Breca, Breca being a very large conglomerate organization out of Peru, running anything from fishing and mining all the way to hospitals, hospitality, as well as financial services, for example. And the way to think about Brain is it's a little bit like a Google X inside of the company. And Alvaro has done some really unique things, which are, I would argue, even more interesting than some of the stuff Google X does. But also, and this speaks to Alvaro and his particular approach, Alvaro is the director of a feature movie called Retablo, which you can watch actually on Netflix. It's streaming on Netflix. And Retablo won 25 prizes, was nominated for BAFTA. So here we have a director and the chief innovation officer at a company deploying technology to solve some of their really interesting, gnarly problems. Alvaro, I'm super stoked to have you. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Pascal. Thank you so much for the opportunity and this introduction. I'm super happy to be here. And thanks to your generosity, I love talking to you and learn a lot. So thanks so much for having me.
No, absolutely. And Alvaro, I want to kick us off with a question for you. How do you even think and define disruption or innovation in your world? How do you think about this?
That's an interesting concept, disruption. No, I think it has many meanings for everybody, and I think it has to be framed, I think, in the right context. On the one hand, I do agree that disruption is something which is fundamentally new, that makes the old obsolete and impacts a lot of people. But for me, it's more interesting to imagine the hard and complex journey that could lead you to that state. In a corporation like Breca that has 130 years, we frame innovation into challenges, projects, and experiments. And of course, you have incremental ones, and you have radical ones, and you have some disruptive ones. But the interesting thing is that as you move forward, the complexity increases, and the talent and the technology to enter into those new spaces are much more complex. But the real question that I'm really interested to try and solve and to work is, in order to disrupt outside, whether we can disrupt from the inside. Because at a corporate level, there are two conflicting forces that are opposing each other at all time. Now you have the status quo on the one side, and you have the creative chaos on the other. By status quo, I mean policies, order, control, structure, the traditional way of doing things, and the standard way of measuring things. And on the other hand, you have the creative chaos, which is challenging the status quo and redesigning the future and experimenting and iterating and trying things out, even when you don't know what it is, and you just have a hunch or an instinct and you just want to play. So how do these two conflicting and opposing forces live together? I think that's an interesting question. And I think the corporations that actually can facilitate these two forces will succeed in time. And the last thing I want to say about this is, if you don't have someone at the board level or the headquarters that is facilitating these two forces, don't invest in innovation in corporations, because it's not going to work. This question actually of disruption comes also to something much more existential, a question which is, how can tradition and modernity work and live together? And the same thing happens in a corporation when you play with innovation or you want to try and be disruptive.
How do you go about this in your work? How do you bring those two crazy sides together? And given your enormous creative potential, I know exactly on which side of that world you live, but how do you do this?
Something that actually worked very well, and I was lucky that it worked from the start. In 2017, when we started the whole thing, the Innovation Hub, we co-created the Innovation Hub with all the CEOs of the company. Hmm. It was not a top-down approach. We designed it with them and with key people. And we had to align to where did we wanted to play in the innovation field and what are going to be our beliefs and what are going to be the rules of the game. So that was prototyped and designed with them. So, of course, we believe in people, in data, in technology, in learning experiences, and the synergies between them as vital sources of innovation. But we already agree in something. That's a good starting point. And then the second thing that we did was to define three main pillars that was based on our strategy. The first one was to develop a pipeline of innovation challenges, experiments, or projects with the objective to learn, to iterate, and to generate economic and strategic impact. The second one was to develop capacity and capabilities that will enable and contribute to all these employees that wanted to execute and scale these innovation challenges. And the third one, the most important for me, is how to generate a cultural transformational movement within the corporation that will inoculate those behaviors and those mindsets required to make all these things happen. And what's interesting is that if one of these pillars fail, the whole thing fails. So how to balance out your projects, your challenges, your capabilities, and your cultural transformation, that was our strategy from the beginning. That was our focus. And 4 years later, it's still working.
You made a comment very early in your explanation that you got all the CEOs of your portfolio companies, of the Breka portfolio companies, to come together and essentially, quote unquote, agree. How did you even get that done? Because very often I find that if you go into these organizations and you say, hey, I'm the transformation guy, you're already at odds with these people. They look at you suspicious and maybe not particularly welcoming. How did you do that?
Yes, there was a lot of serendipity there. And actually, I have to give the credit to the CEO of the group, Jaime Arauz, because as soon as I finished the movie, I took a year out and went to Ayacucho to do this movie. And the day that I arrived to Lima, I had a meeting with Jaime, and he wanted to bring me forward to the group to make all these things happen. But he said to me, what has to happen for you to come? And I said, I would love to meet all these CEOs, because if they do not have the drive or the passion, this will not work. And he actually organized, before actually I started, a meeting with each one of them. So I met them even before I arrived at the task. And of course, out of 12 CEOs, there were like one third that was ready to make things happen. There was another third that told me, yeah, I'm really interested in doing this and start innovating, but I'm really afraid. I'm really afraid of how to organize it because everything is in order. I don't know how to do it. And there was another third that was very honestly said, I'm not interested right now. But there was a truth. It was very transparent. And I developed the relationships with them. So when I started, everything was much easier. And there's a culture of openness there that helped me design all these workshops in the evenings, not in the mornings, because in the evenings they have free time and give them some beers and magic happens. It took us like 3-4 months to connect, to understand their fears and also what's their purpose, the purpose of the business, but their own purpose as well, to craft something from there.
You talked about the three pillars. And I've heard variants of those three pillars from other companies as well. Though granted, most companies don't seem to be actually successful implementing those three pillars. What did you do to make these things actually work?
Let's go through each one of the pillars because it's really interesting stories. For instance, when you define a pipeline, we had a pipeline of 50 to 60 projects. And of course, some of them will work, some of them will not work, but for me, innovation projects is just an excuse to learn something new, and you will gain confidence and courage to leap forward in the next one. So the tolerance for failure was something that was working, and we were very lucky that our hit rate with quick wins was doing well. And when I'm talking about, for instance, our first projects was in the fishery business unit, TASA, we designed and implemented a fishing ways. You know, the ways when you work, you go from one point to the other in your car. We did a fishing way system to optimize the fleet route in order to improve the quality and freshness of the newest catch. Or for instance, in Chroma, the painting company, we ran a data analytics project using AI to empower our sales force to have a better understanding of the client's unique preferences and could do cross-selling and upselling. Or in the mining business, we started collaborating with many startups internationally to iterate with nanobubble systems in their mining practices to optimize tin recovery. And for instance, last year with the pandemic, we did many, many task forces to help and fight the COVID-19. But one was to partner with private and academic sector in Peru to orchestrate the design, the production, the distribution of emergency ventilators to save lives, because there was only 250 emergency ventilators in the country and people were dying. The first thing I can say with all these examples is that there was a leap of faith from the board and from our CEO to just go for it. Many of these projects created a lot of quick wins and not only economic impact, but strategic impact, which was really interesting. The second thing in our pillar, which is the capacity building, something that we created from the start was an initiative called Brain Academy, which is a safe platform, a parallel platform for you to fail, feel faster and feel better in order to learn. So because the most complicated thing of people today, when they want to innovate, they are afraid of making mistakes, right? And especially in corporation, it's interesting because when you're directing a movie, you have a time and a space and a budget to fail. The best scenes in a movie, you can make it in the 10th take, on the 15th take. You're not going to do it in the first take. You need to iterate, right? So these structures had to be placed within the corporation, and we needed to have all these connective tissues aligned for the learnings to start transferring from one side to the other. And another thing that we did through all these Brain Academy initiatives, we could segment our employees in different learning pathways. For instance, a data problem solver or a human-centered designer or an experimental tech, they need different capabilities to be developed. No, for instance, if you're a data problem solver, there can be a data scientist or a digital engineer. Not only you have to be good at manage structure and structured data or produce machine learning models or development of data products, but you also have to be good at complex problem solving or complex problem framing or have a user-focused mindset and effective communication skills. And it was really interesting because as we started these projects, we started seeing, my God, these data scientists or some group of them are really good at a lot of things, but they are not good at communication skills, for instance, no, or have a user focus. So what we did in that sense was learn from parallel worlds. For instance, what would happen if Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, we will send a group of data scientists to be bartenders in our hotels, to force them to communicate and to connect with each other, and little by little, gain their confidence and they gain their courage to leap forward. And today these people are the ones that have their own voice and are doing amazing things with AI. You know? So is this platform of how to create a space where people can develop their capacities and capabilities is super important in order to start playing with not necessarily incremental projects, but also radical or disruptive ones. And the third one, which I think for me is the most complex one in the battle between the status quo and the creative chaos and the innovation side, is how to create this cultural transformational movement and how do you inoculate these behaviors and the behaviors. I mean, we have a lot of behaviors now and that we want to, and mindsets that want to change, but give you some three examples. The first one is, for us, conflicts of ideas are necessary for this to work. The best questions are born from the position of ideas. We need people and teams who dare to have their own voice. And sometimes people are afraid of having their own voice. And you need to put that into practice. The second one that we needed to inoculate quickly when we started was, innovation is not a buzzword, because everybody, you know, thinks innovation is wishy-washy, you know? There are disciplines, there are methods, there are tools that help us enter into this journey to both imagine and land, to diverge or converge, but both skills are needed and depends on the disciplines. That's why we created in a hub a human-centered design lab and a tech and digital lab and a center for advanced analytics and an open innovation lab. So we have different lenses to see the problems in different light. Or for instance, another mindset, which I particularly love, it's about love. Like love, innovation cannot be forced. Innovation is a voluntary act and is born from your dream, your courage. If you're not excited by your project or you're not excited about what is waiting to be discovered, then this is not for you. So then you have to decide. But thinking about the potential impact we could have on people's lives, in our communities, in our industries, in our countries, actually can spark some inspiration. No? And another one with this one, I finished, but I could go on. No? But something that was important for our brand, which is brain, but with an E, not with an A. And the E is super important because it's the E for empathy. In order to, you know, in all this movement to tolerate others, it's very difficult because we are complex human beings. But through empathy and putting ourselves in the shoes of the others and understand their needs and connect in a really genuine way, where personal barriers can melt out and trust can increase, magic can happen. If there's generosity in the relationships, magic can happen. We had interesting manifesto of what we believe from the beginning to make this transformational movement work. And so far, so good. We're getting there.
That is incredible. I also love just the sheer passion you have for this. Let's say you would leave brain behind, which you will clearly not do, but you would leave brain behind. You would start afresh, different company, different context. What would you do as the first couple of things to make sure that you can replicate this and or even build on it?
That's a really good question. But I think right now, my three main learnings or four main learnings of designing an innovation hub. The first one I want to talk is about leadership willingness. Normally, when you have a portfolio of innovation projects, of course, which one do you choose? And normally, everyone to choose the one that has the highest impact. Don't do that. What you have to choose is the one where the leadership is so strong that really believes in that purpose-driven project. How much time would that CEO will invest in that project? And what role he or she will play? And you know why this is important? Because the creation of an algorithm or a new product prototype is not the challenging part, although it has its challenges. The most challenging part is the navigation through the system and the resistance of change or the resistance of the status quo, where the complexity lies. If the CEO is part of lubricating that system with generosity and empathy, real impact and real magic will happen. So when you choose, rather than choose looking at numbers, choose which CEO or which leader is really, really passionate about that will put his or her life to make that happen. Start with that. Another principle, I think, or learning is the iteration mindset. Before actually you start on a project, figure out if that business unit has an appropriate and nurturing environment, conducive for experimentation, iteration, and learning. Because if it doesn't, they have to do some homework before they start. Because if not, this will not work. The third one, I call it organizational readiness. How ready is the organization in terms of skills, capabilities, mindsets, culture, to create impact? Depending on its readiness, sometimes we suggest to start with a much more incremental innovation challenge rather than a more disruptive one because they don't have the skills. Yeah. So they need to learn in order to leap forward. So this has worked very well for us. Of course, the fourth one is the one I mentioned before about co-creating everything with the CEOs and with the people rather than having a top-down approach. That's the worst thing you can do. An innovation hub cannot be in a silo. It has to be at the center with a lot of connective tissues everywhere to make this happen. And the fifth one, and with this I finish, which I think is the most complex one, you have to lobby to redesign the balance scorecards of the CEOs to have medium-term results and not only short-term ones, because the incentive system has to be aligned with what you want to do in the medium term. No. So I would focus on those five.
If you were to stay in your vernacular, go into the parallel world, and I'm curious to hear, and this is probably also my last question, I don't want to overextend your time you so generously spent here with us. What do you think are the things companies tend to stumble over? As in well-meaning companies and leaders are embarking on this journey. What is the stuff you find they trip over?
Okay. For instance, when I look at some project that didn't work and what we learned is that sometimes let's start with leadership. Some leaders do not trust their teams. And that's the basis of the whole thing. That's one. Or sometimes the leader trusts their teams, but they do not know exactly what every team needs to flourish. And they treat them the same. And every team is different. When I did a film and I did another film, you have different teams. You have to orchestrate them differently. There's no formula for that. It's just connection and living with them and figuring out something that works for the whole team. A third one, I think, when leaders are not truly purpose-driven, they do not fight for the best projects to make their purpose a reality. Sometimes they focus more on projects that have an economic impact. But truly, how can we help today leaders to understand the real purpose of what they want to do? And also, they are questioning it and they are looking for it. And sometimes they don't have it that clear. And I think that's really important. Another thing that I like is that when leaders are not interested or do not understand the insights behind the project, that revelation discovered from the users, we need to help them because they will not see the project or they will not evaluate the project with the eyes that we are working with it. They're going to see it with other eyes, no? And of course, you have the traditional one. When leaders want to measure metrics with a traditional lens, every project has its own metrics. But of course, there are a lot of leaders that are moving forward, and it's very amazing to see how they are doing this right as well. And that's what moves me a lot and I feel really proud of this ecosystem that we have built in the first 4 years. And the question is, where can this take us? But at the end of the day, it's about passionate and courageous and resilient individuals, because innovation, as you know, is about resilience. There will be 3,000 no's, but only one yes, and that's it. You will make magic. And you have to have very strong multidisciplinary teams that trust each other. And there has to be this level of complicity. And you can find it in their eyes. And you will cheer for each other and you will trust each other. No? But at the end of the day, if organizations do not facilitate and nurture this transformational journey, they shouldn't even invest in this. They will lose time. And that's why there's so many companies today in the world that after a couple of years, it's very difficult for them to move forward. But it's about empathy. It's about the transformational movement. It's about discovering what is waiting to be discovered. And this passion that I particularly have, you have to also see it at the board level, at the headquarters level, at the business unit level. And if that happens, magic will happen definitely.
Alvaro, my friend, I could not wish for a better ending of our conversation. That was incredible. Thank you so much for sharing your insights, for being the human you are, for being the leader you are, and bringing so much passion into this. I think I learned a lot about the role of leadership, the role of connective tissue, the importance of empathy in the work we're doing. I also love the fact that I learned a lot about the parallels between your work as a chief innovation officer in a company, as well as your work as a director of a movie. So thank you so much. This was absolutely phenomenal.
No, thank you so much for the opportunity. You know, I love talking to you. I always learn so much from you, and thanks so much for having me.
As a final note, I just want to acknowledge very quickly those that are making this happen and doing the really hard work. Firstly, the teams at Brain and in the business units need passionate, courageous, and resilient individuals that are constantly pushing the boundaries further. Secondly, the CEOs of the business units for figuring out their real purpose and throwing themselves to the pool to making it happen. And finally, the generous and courageous board members and the CEO of Breca for facilitating that these two opposing forces between the status quo and innovation can creatively live together, with the objective of generating real opportunities to transcend.
Hey, it's Pascal. Thanks for tuning in on this episode of Disrupt Disruption. If you want more, check out the other episodes we have on this podcast. Also know that this is part of an effort of us writing a book about disruption. So keep your eyes and ears peeled towards that. And if you liked it, do us a favor. Go on your podcasting platform of choice, iTunes, Google Play, whatever it is, and just like this. There's some weird algorithm thing, which, you know, if you like it, they will like us. So do me a favor, do that. And if you've got any questions, any comments, anyone I should talk to, drop us an email. Easiest email address for me to reach it is p@finet.com. With that being said, thank you so much for listening, and I will hear you here soon.